Welcome
to Unlimited Realities. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer, and I'm really, really pleased to have such a wonderful, chock-full, informative show for you today. We have three guests, so it's going to be a little busy, but we start off with a fascinating subject, and I'm really, really interested to get into this with author and researcher Marie Jones, who wrote the book Mind Wars, in addition with Larry Flaxman. And Mind Wars is a book about the history of mind control, surveillance, and social engineering by the government, media, and secret societies. So, you know, I am a history channel watcher, so this is right up my alley, and I'm really looking forward to talking with Marie. So without further ado, we're going to introduce Marie Jones, and we also have two more guests after that. So hello, hello, welcome, Marie. Thank you so much for being our guest on Unlimited Realities today. Your book, Mind Wars, was fascinating. Tremendous, tremendous information you've really researched here. Welcome. Hello, Marie, are you there?
Yeah.
Hi, Marie.
Hi there. I heard a strange voice telling me that I was being muted and unmuted. So
oh,
I don't know if you heard
okay.
a word.
Okay, I apologize. I was wondering where we went there. So as I was telling the audience, you wrote Mind Wars in addition with Larry Flaxman, and this is a book that talks about the history of mind control, surveillance, and social engineering by both the government, the media, and also secret societies. So let's just dive into this, because this is quite a theory. And I would like to talk to you about how did you come up with understanding that this theory existed, or information that this theory existed? Where did it come from?
Well, it actually came from asking the same questions that you did. Is this theory, or is there a real part of our history? And interestingly, in the research, finding out that yes, indeed, this has been a big black mark on the history of not just our country, but obviously many others. And really wanting to write an objective book that looked at the use of mind control over time. And we're going way back to ancient civilizations and, you know, the dawning of secret societies and through the Middle Ages, all the way up through the infamous MK Ultra period to today and into the future, because the future is where the social engineering and the surveillance really become more amplified, and the things that we sort of have to look forward to.
Okay.
So really, yeah, that was the line of inquiry that Larry and I took. It was like, okay, we want to know how much of this is real and how much of this is fringe and conspiracy.
Right, right. You followed it up with a tremendous amount of research, and I was really, really impressed by how you went about following up the theories. So what events would you say recently that you'd be able to link or prove some mind control aspects or where it has been used? I mean, our media has been full of atrocities, and it seems like things are out of control in so many ways. You attribute some of this in your book to some very direct mind control elements. Can we discuss that a little bit?
Sure. I think right now, you know, as of the present, the media is the number one cult. Some people don't like to use the term mind control because it makes them think of movies and
right.
You know, crazy novels and things, but this is really happening. Media manipulation, social engineering, whatever you want to call it, it is happening. We have a very directed agenda that the media takes on, whether you're talking about the right or the left, to give very specific information that is not necessarily the truth. In fact, much of what we see today as news is not news. It's opinion. It's spin. It's the presentation of unproven facts that later might get cleared up. I can't tell you how many times I've watched my local news and had them talk about stories that they didn't even have the proven facts for yet. And then 2 days later, they're backpedaling, trying to apologize for not having waited a little.
Right,
so it's
right.
Really,
journalism is like
it's dead.
Yes,
oh,
it truly is.
At the same time, great minds. Journalism is dead. And,
yes,
and to fight
it really
the journalism,
is.
Yeah, you have to really dig. Now, a lot of people will say, well, there's the alternative media sources. The problem with those is that they don't always exercise that same discernment. Sometimes.
Right.
You really have to stand in the middle of the mass media and the alternative media and just go with your gut. And people don't want to do their own research. That's another thing that the media
right.
is very much aware of. So they'll throw
right.
anything at you, and they know the vast majority of listeners and viewers are going to accept it as truth.
Right. Well, we've become such a lazy society in so many ways, and you know, we look to journalists to really give us the truth and the meat of what's going on out there, and the control and the manipulation that is prevalent within media is, and the immaturity in journalism that is prevailed. I
yes.
read something in my local newspaper, and this infuriated me so much that they were taking quotes from the Syrian president off his Facebook page, and I thought to myself, "Dear God, is this where we have come? I mean, we're writing, you know, the Associated Press is taking quotes from the Syrian president's Facebook page. This
exactly.
is insane, you know." So
it
it's
really
like,
is.
You know, what world are we living in? I mean, who's running this? Is it a bunch of clowns? I mean, where are we? So this brings me to another question, which probably is a little bit, maybe not a good segue. However, are you concerned about any retaliation for revealing this information? I mean, there's, you know, there's so many stories out there of people just disappearing when they show up with information that isn't savory, that isn't, you know.
You know, nobody's knocking at my door. Larry actually work in a very sort of high profile government related job where, you know, he more than anybody, but he's not had any issues. I think because we're presenting information that you can't really argue against if you do the research. A lot of this is stuff that is out there. And so
right.
we're just presenting it to a wider audience. If anything, I would have imagined that we might have had some problems, you know, going and talking about it so much with the voice-to-skull technology and the electronic harassment chapter, which was the most frightening to write. And there's really
yeah.
not been a whole lot. But, you know, that doesn't – Larry and I were talking about what we wanted to write about next, and we were thinking about a subject that really could get us hurt. And we thought, well, maybe we better not do that. You know, maybe we better think about this. We both have children. But, it was a concern. I am just absolutely blown away, though, by the reception this book has had, not just for the information about the MKUltra spying program in the media, but we really wanted to show how, even in our interpersonal relationships, we are constantly trying to manipulate each other and using the same kind of coercive techniques that are used on a grander, you know, government scale. We do this to each other. We do it in love relationships. We do it in boss-employee relationships, and that really blew a lot of people away.
Right, right. You must be reading my mind. I was just speaking to a dear friend of mine who's going through this in relationships right now, and it's amazing how we have become so so skilled at being able to manipulate. And it's a mindset that one has to be very mindful of, that it, one, exists, and two, that you don't go there. So how
right.
can we avoid mind control and benefit from some positive aspects?
Well, controlling your own mind, obviously, is the goal.
Mm-hmm, right.
If anybody's going to control it, you want to do that. And there are benefits to mind control, things like self-hypnosis or hypnosis to lose weight or quit smoking or get healthy, you know, brain entrainment using different vibrational frequencies and sounds and pulses to improve your brain's ability to absorb information. And I mean, there's a lot of really positive, more self-help oriented things that come with being, oh, just simply being aware of your own thoughts. This is the problem. I would say that the vast majority of the thoughts that go through our head are not ours. We do not even think about what we're thinking about. And going into some more scary stuff like personal manipulation, there are a lot of psychopaths, sociopaths, narcissists out there in the world that prey upon people who do not stay aware of where their minds are at. And
right.
A lot of the same manipulative techniques that they use are the same techniques used by cult leaders.
Right.
Intermittent reinforcement, you know, showering someone with love, but then abusing them in between and getting them sort of in this weird state of cognitive dissonance where they don't even know what reality is, and just, you know, using these really coercive techniques that we see cult leaders using, and then we see the government using, we see the media using. So obviously these techniques work. But they can be used for positive too.
Right. Now, how do you foresee mind control contributing to the Colorado theater shooter? You have a segment in the book that talks about that. And
right.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the psychosis or the mind of that type of individual. How is it that mind is more vulnerable to suggestion or mind control? Or can we talk a little bit about that?
This is, shooter syndrome, and it's a big question mark because this is something where you get into that gray area where a lot of these mass shootings that we see, and there's a lot of people who believe that these shooters are under some form of mind control. Now, some of them do act like they're not operating of their own accord. They look vacant. James Holmes, certainly, who was the Aurora, Colorado theater shooter, when you see him on TV, he doesn't look like he's there. And some of them have some really unusual connections to people that either work for the government or the finance industry or, you know, some kind of weird connection to taking certain pharmaceuticals that could have caused them to become this way. So you've got this sort of conspiratorial angle to this. Are these shooters trained assassins? Are they part of MKUltra that did not end in the 1970s? And maybe this is the new way of the government enacting some kind of mind control on the populace? Or are they just lone nut jobs, which is really hard to prove either one because there's evidence for both.
Right.
But it is frightening. It's frightening anytime something like this happens and you hear people say, oh, it's the government. You know, they want to take away our guns. And yet then you have the other side saying, but wait a minute, when these things happen, gun sales skyrocket. So it's kind of hard to know who's behind the agenda.
Right.
But yeah, here's my feeling personally. And we wanted to present the information, but personally, I feel like you can look for something. You're going to find evidence of your theory either way.
Okay,
and
I understand.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what you look for, you seek. And, you know, in the book, you were talking about the quest for the Manchurian Candidate. Can we talk a little bit about what that is and how you were seeking the connection?
This is where we get into the real stuff. Now, this is documented, provable, a part of our history that you can, you know, there is actual documentation that has been declassified. But in the 1950s, during the Korean War, many of our POWs were brainwashed. So in our effort to try to figure out how that happened and how we could avoid it, obviously on a deeper level, how we could do it to other people, our government, which eventually fell under the auspices of the CIA, started a project called MKUltra. And this was an umbrella program that began, you know, in the late 50s into the early 60s, and it ran into around the mid-70s before it was halted. And
okay.
What this program involved was over 80 different institutions, prisons, orphanages, mental institutions, colleges, universities, what have you, that were engaging in some very specific psychological abuse, torture, brainwashing research using, human subjects. And again, there were two congressional hearings that exposed this program to the public and eventually got it shut down. Unfortunately, right before one of them, Richard Helms, who was the then director of the CIA, destroyed a massive amount of MKUltra documentation. So the documents that we do have were gleaned through the Freedom of Information Act, and there's still quite a few to look at, and it's enough to, indict the whole program. But a lot of people believe that it didn't end. It just splintered into smaller, deeper black programs, because I don't think that we would ever stop this kind of research. And I talked to a woman who works in the prison system and says, we're testing drugs on prisoners. We're testing, non-lethal weapons. And it continues. But I think it continues now in a much smaller way.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's, in so many ways that we are, guinea pigs, and it's the mindful awareness that we can, have basically in every aspect of our life to kind of look at things a little differently than maybe how we're told to look at things. And it takes that discerning mind to really differentiate between fact and fiction and what holds true. And I really loved your comment on trusting your gut, because that's I'm all about that. But it's one of those things that sometimes people are easily influenced, thinking that their gut's telling them one thing, and when in fact it's telling them something else.
Exactly. So, yeah, we've lost touch with our own ability to discern the truth, and that's, I think, because of the overwhelming amount of information and distraction that we have today, which is, wow, what a great way to control us. Keep us distracted.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's perfect, and give the power away. Give it away to somebody else who knows something better than we do. And that's the mentality that so many are tapped into. So it's, your book is fascinating, Marie. I really loved it. There's so much here.
Oh, thank you.
I want everyone to know, again, how to get in touch with you. The book is called Mind Wars, and it is authored by Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman. And it is through New Page and Warwick Publishing, and publicists are promoting Marie and Larry's book. And it's a history of mind control, surveillance, social engineering by the government, media, and secret societies. It is a wonderful book. It's one of those books where you will look at everything in your life a little differently. And
that's a good thing.
Yes, you will no longer be gullible.
Once you wake up, you see you have more power, and that's the bottom line.
Right, and the power that you do have, you want to reorchestrate it. So it's something where you actually have more control over the power that you do have. So instead of giving it all away, but I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. And where can our listeners get in touch with you or your book? I know you have a website.
Right. My website is www.mariedjones.com, and the book is available everywhere, online, brick-and-mortar bookstores. And thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
It was wonderful, Marie. I really appreciate your information and your book, and I look forward to more from you. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
And we're moving into our second guest today. And our second guest is going to be a wonderful woman who wrote a beautiful story. And the book is called Bed 39. And it's written by Sean McKelvey. I want to say that right because it's a very Irish name, and I know how it's written. So it's Bed 39, and it was written by Sean McKelvey. And the story that this is about, and it's a very, very wonderful book to read, like when you're falling asleep. I started this book planning to watch a movie with my husband, and I started it after dinner, and I could not put it down, and I read it till I went to sleep, way into the night. It's a wonderful, wonderful book, but it's a love story, and it's a love story about the inception of hospice, how hospice came to be. And hospice came to be through a wonderful woman named Cicely Saunders, who started off first as a nurse and then decided she wanted to work with patients who were nearing their death. And so she was called to this. It was a calling. In finding out the treatment that those in the 40s and 50s were suffering in their end-of-life treatment, the atrocities of pain and the screams in the hallways of the wards and the lack of compassion and sensitivity that she found spurred her to build and develop what is now known as hospice, which if you have ever experienced a loved one who is dying, hospice is the absolute most perfect solution for both you, the caretaker, your loved ones and family members, and your loved one who's dying. Hospice is an organization that is international. It is the end-of-life process. It is filled with both physicians, social workers, nurses, clergy, and spiritual support. It also offers whatever pain management you would need. Hospice offers both a brick-and-mortar building for those who would like to come to their facility to pass, as well as those who want to stay in their own home. Hospice allows an ability for nurses to come to your home and administer both care, medicine, and your needs until it's time for you to go, where you're able to live and die in your comforts of your home with your loved ones around you. Now, the hospice building as well offers the same options. They have the most beautifully decorated rooms. It looks like a room in your home or somebody's home. It is often designed by interior decorators. It's done with a tremendous amount of love and care. The people there at hospice are living earth angels within themselves. I've worked with some social workers years ago, decades ago now, and it was an extremely moving experience for me, something that I will never forget, and something that changed my life forever as I worked with patients, people who were getting ready to die, who were looking at their life and their loves, their purposes and what they've contributed in this life, and also in their passing and how they wanted to pass, the music they wanted to choose for their memorial, the colors they wanted, the flowers they wanted, the things they wanted to say or have said. All these things are enabled when you have compassionate care at the end of your life. And this is what hospice offers. They offer people that are earth angels. They offer people that are not only skilled in their craft, in their social work, in their nursing, in their doctoring, but these people have hearts and souls that go beyond the human condition. These people look beyond their own pain and suffering while they're assisting these people, these souls, into their next transition. They deal with death and grief every day, And they are remarkable souls, some of the finest people that walk this earth. So I wanted to give you a little preface into what this book is about, because it does read like a love story, okay? It is a fictional story, however, written of actual people that were significant in the development of hospice. So we have some key players here. We have Dr. Cicely Saunders, who's in the book, and we have her love, who was David. And then we have a wonderful couple that I loved their story so much, Tomas and Mia. And it's a wonderful, wonderful love story. Bed 39 is the ultimate love story, which recounts two tales of romantic love born on hospital deathbeds, decades apart, and in countries on opposite sides of the Atlantic Ocean. The love between Tomas and Mia in the United States, as well as David and Cicely in the United Kingdom, are filled with meaning, passion, and true love that transcend life and death. Bed 39 also tells the true story of birth and evolution of hospice that sprang from David and Cicely's love, the tale of an overarching, bigger love, agape love, the love of humanity, implicit in the evolution of compassionate care for the terminally ill. An array of beloved characters occupy bed 39 over the decades, thanks to Tomas's decision to imprint his soul on bed 39 after his extremely premature death at age 27. He treats us to seeing the unique humanity of each of the lives they have lived. So here, without further ado, I introduce to you the author of Bed 39, Sean McKelvey. Welcome, Sean. Your Bed 39 book is phenomenal. Welcome to Unlimited Realities, and thank you so much for being our guest today.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. I'm pleased to be here.
I loved your book. It was such a wonderful love story. I went into it, feeling like I was going to read about the history of hospice, which, of course, comes through in the story. But what I got out of your book was so much more than the evolving history of what hospice was. I actually read one of the best love stories I've ever read.
And oh, my gosh, I'm thrilled.
I honestly, Sean, I was telling the audience before you came on how I was getting settled into bed early and was getting ready to watch a movie later on with my husband. I had picked up your book after dinner, and the movie was never watched because I read your book until I finished it.
Oh, my. So, that means so much to me.
Oh, it was wonderful. It really was. I truly suggest everybody who loves a good love story or a good read to get Bed 39. It's a wonderful, wonderful love story. The tears, the emotions, and what the perspective that you gave from love was not coming from the sexuality. It came from such the depths of soul that it really, it was so touching. And the way it was written and the way it was projected, it was just an extremely heartfelt book. So without me rambling on anymore, I would like to come and throw this down to you and talk to you about how did Bed 39 come into being, Sean? I mean, this is an incredible story.
Oh, and I'd love to answer that. That's actually a friend of mine that I have known since I was a young girl, since we were 9 years old when we met, and she is a certified hospice nurse. We both went into nursing school. I ended up doing a variety of, from emergency room to critical care, and through the years, she had been telling me just stories that, and especially we were discussing this in 2012, about the last moments of life and some of the things that she has witnessed between families. Some were not so spectacular, the fighting, the arguing, and we both felt this is a time when families need to unify. And unfortunately, in many circumstances, that's not the case. Sometimes it fractures a family. And she said, well, you're the author, write the story. And so I thought, well, here I'm writing about death, you know, and I wanted this book to be not merely for hospice nurses or healthcare, other healthcare professionals, but I felt, because I had experienced the same thing when my father passed away, how a little bit of fracturing among the siblings, and it was tough. We have it together now, but I wanted to somehow create multiple messages to families and have the book be for anybody who's 17 through 90 years old.
Right.
But here we have this death. You know, I'm writing a book. So my goal was take this very difficult topic that many people will say, oh, no, it's not for me, and they don't even know what it's about. But to take this and create a profoundly captivating book that would capture the hearts and minds of the readers for many years to come, you know, and totally change their outlook as to how it should be, you know, for not only their life but for others, and for even animals, because now there's even hospice for, you know, care for animals. But then, in the process of doing research, I found out about Cicely Saunders and David Tasma and their love. And I'm thinking, Candy, did you know about this? And she heard the name, but she didn't really know. And then my own physician trained in London at St. Christopher's Hospital. And I said, oh, did you hear about, you know, you have the first organized hospital? And I was finding out that nobody had really, at least in America, had not really heard about Cicely Saunders, and especially David Tasma. So when their love, and Cicely started out, do you want me to explain how their love came
to
be?
Sure, go ahead. Sure, yes. It's a lovely story.
In this, in researching the story, Cicely Saunders was from Barnet, Hertfordshire, England, born in 1918, and she's rather she would rather be reading a great book, and communication was not her strength. However, she had an enormous heart, and she decided to enter into the field of nursing, and she saw the inadequacies of how the terminally ill were treated, you know, how their symptoms, how their last moments were not filled with dignity and comfort. Mm-hmm. And in her mind, over a period of years, she had been storing a plan and you know, just as to how it should be, you know, that people should be able to die with dignity, et cetera, et cetera. She ended up hurting herself, unfortunately, but then she became a social worker. And in 1948, David Tasma was one of her patients, and he was a Polish immigrant all alone in London and dying without anybody, you know, no immediate family or friends in the area. Cicely Saunders became his social worker, and she had asked David Tasma, what do you want to know, David, about death? And he said, I want to know what's in your heart and mind. I guess it chokes me up. I don't know why.
Oh.
And so anyway, over a period of 2 months, their love grew, but it never left the hospital. And she revealed to him her greater plan. And, you know, he would say, and I'll be a window to your home. And I'll be that window, Cicely. So anyway, you know, when he passed on, he ended up, all he had was 500 pounds, and that became 500,000. Yeah. And, you know, she ended up, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. He had willed that to her, right? He had willed the 500 pounds to Cicely to start her new vision, which became hospice. And that was in 1957. So in 1958, she went and became a doctor, correct?
That was in 1948. And then 1957, she went on. She graduated from medical school. And then she felt that if, and of course there was encouragement for other, you know, important people in her life, but that one person encouraged her to move forward. And she became a doctor to have a greater voice. and, you know, to start research on more, you know, more, you know, added, you know, more effective pain control for these patients who are dying, who are terminally ill. And so she ended up, she founded the first organized hospice in the world, which is St. Christopher's Hospice in South London. And I just felt, when I did research, I could find very little about David Tasma, maybe a paragraph, but in my mind, David Tasma's role was huge, because I think of all the successful people, and how many of them had a David Tasma in their life, you know, that nobody knows about, that you wonder, would, you know, she had 2 months to talk to him and discuss her plan, and it makes you wonder how many others, you know, were affected, had their total life changed, their future, because of the David Tasma in their life. So in my book, Bed 39, I wanted to integrate that factual story and make David Tasma one of the heroes. And so I also have the other main character, Thomas Kaminsky, and there's a variety of other stories of others who come to the sunset of their life in Bed 39.
It was wonderful. I think Thomas and Mia was my favorite story. Honestly,
thank you.
David and Cicely was wonderful, and of course that's the foundation. But Thomas and Mia was just—it was just a lovely. I just felt like I was, you know, a bird's eye watching the unfolding of that, and that was such an intimate, lovely, lovely story. And what you have done in offering both the history and such a lovely love story, but you've also, you know, entwined within the story a tremendous amount of hope, a tremendous amount of insight into the afterlife of connections and how love never dies, and also a tremendous amount of reconnection within, because when we are faced with those end-of-life decisions, many people question even their long-held beliefs, their religions, their faith. And this was just so purely written from soul. It just felt so pure that regardless of your belief and your culture or your religious beliefs, this brought you back home to where your soul was and felt comfortable. And it just, it really spoke to me about the comfort of that next transition we all have ahead of us, and how we never die and the soul always lives, and how love lives on and on. And this was just such a wonderful testament to both love and soul. And I really commend you for writing Bed 39. It's a wonderful, wonderful story. Thank you so much
for sharing your
book and your insight and being my guest today. It's been wonderful.
Thank you so much. And if I have just a minute, to thank Mark Rosenthal. He's a screenwriter and a friend of Patty, Reagan, from the Center for Great Apes. He read my manuscript when I thought I was done. I'm not going to change anything. And we spoke for an hour, you know, hour plus, and he gave me a feedback. And I thought I was done, and I ended up writing 3 more chapters as a result of our conversation with, you know, together, you know, Mark Rosenthal and myself. And it became a much more improved book. So I have to thank him as well for his feedback.
Oh, wonderful. Nice, nice. Well, it's a wonderful book. I really, really, I read a lot. I read a lot of books, and I just really loved reading your book. I mean, there's a lot of books I read that aren't great, you know, and this is just a wonderful book to read. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it, and it was so much more than I anticipated. So everybody who loves a love story, Bed 39. Wonderful, wonderful story. And you get bonuses. You get the history of hospice, and you've got a tremendous amount of faith and hope that comes out of it. So thank you so much for being on my show, Sean. I've totally enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate your feedback.
You're welcome. God bless. And I look forward to some more writing from you, Sean. So.
Oh, thank you. God bless you, too. Take care, Lisa.
You, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now, without further ado, boy, this hour is just cranking by, isn't it? That's what you get for three guests, huh? Anyway, my third guest is such a wonderful light soul. And I say light because you will feel the light that's within this man. His name is Gordon Davidson, and he is the author of Practical Visionary, Spiritual Politics, and with a foreword by the Dalai Lama, Builders of the Dawn. He and his wife, Corinne McLaughlin, are co-authors and co-founders for the Center of Visionary Leadership, which is based in California. They're also co-founders of Sirius, a spiritual and ecological community in Massachusetts. And they also are fellows of the World Business Academy, the Findhorn Foundation, and members of the Transformational Leadership Council. So we are going to be talking to Gordon Asher Davidson today in regard to his wonderful workshop that is scheduled for a one-day seminar at Unity in he has one in Unity on November 12th in Naples, Florida, and he has another one at Bonita Shores Club for a one-day seminar on Saturday, November 14th in Bonita Springs. So we're going to talk to him about the Transfiguration of Our World, Part 2, his latest developments in the unfolding plan of the Light Alliance, Gordon Asher Davidson and Corinne McLaughlin. We're going to talk a lot today about what's going on in our world. We're going to talk a lot about why is the world in such an upheaval, what or who is causing it, and where are we headed. This is based on Gordon's extraordinary book, The Transfiguration of Our World. And he's going to give an overview of the situation as crises have evolved and what that looks like for us in the future and present. This is also based on 30 years of his deep meditation and contact with higher beings. Gordon will share how the world is being guided by an interdimensional light alliance, working closely with many members of humanity to release and hold the darkness of our planet. To release the hold of darkness on our planet. That's what he's here to do. And that is some powerful work, Gordon. So without further ado, we're going to introduce Gordon Davidson now. And I want to thank Gordon for being our guest today on Unlimited Reality. Welcome, welcome, Gordon. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here.
Oh, it's always a wonderful, wonderful gift to have you. You were such a light to have a few months back, and now you have even more insight and information for us to share today. But I want to first start off with giving a little shout-out for your talks, your seminars, both on Saturday, November 14th, you're going to be doing an all-day seminar from 9:30 to 4:30 at the Bonita Shores Club in Bonita Springs, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Thursday, November 12th, at 7 p.m., you're going to give a free evening talk at Unity of Naples, at Unity Way in Naples, Florida. And everyone can reach you for registration at www.worldtransfiguration.com. Or I'm going to give you the phone number, area code 239-777-2983. Welcome, welcome, Gordon Davidson. Thank you so much for being our guest today. Now let's talk about what in the world is going on, Gordon. This world is...
There is a lot going on.
There's no doubt about that. Talk to me. What is happening?
Well, I think it's... Our way of summarizing it in a simple way is we're reaching the culminating phase of the great ongoing struggle between light and dark on this planet that's been going on for millennia. And we are really coming to the point where the light forces, the higher beings, the enlightened members of humanity, the leaders who are operating under higher guidance, all of us together are receiving this tremendous wave of light that's pouring into the planet from higher levels and responding to it. You know, the initiatives that millions and millions of people around the world are taking to, you know, do things to free us from all these kind of controls, take care of each other, you know, build the new lighted world that we all long for in our hearts. All of that is accelerating in such an incredible way. And at the same time, we can see the loosening or lessening of the control these control powers have had over our systems. And more people are speaking out, talking about what's all the hidden secret agendas and corruption that's gone on in our world for so long. And as it's exposed, it's becoming less and less powerful. And so we're in this kind of great culmination of all of this ongoing struggle for, you know, that's been going on a very long time. That's a quick summary.
Right. And it's so interesting because my first guest was talking about the mind control on the planet,
mm-hmm.
and here you're talking about we're going to lift that energy. So
absolutely.
I find this it's a great beginning and an end to the show. So here we go, people. Here we're going to listen to Gordon and we're going to get this energy shifted. So
yes.
How do we do this, Gordon?
Well, the most important thing is, first of all, to realize that each of us are powerful divine creators. That is one of our gifts as divine beings incarnating into forms. We have the power to create our life and our world and our future. And this is so important. And people do not fully understand how powerful we are with our thoughts, with our feelings, with our imagination, mm-hmm. with our vision of what our life can be and what our future can be. And, you know, for a long time there's been this type of control where there's a lot of projection into the consciousness of humanity about very dark scenarios about the future. And
yes.
And that is part of the control system. And it's completely erroneous and it's not true, because what all of those scenarios and even the scientific projections that are being made do not take into consideration is the kind of higher order, higher level help that we are receiving from all kinds of different levels to make it through successfully, make it through this crisis, and create the kind of world we all want, which is where we will have a permeation of love, the elimination of violence and hate, and a real creation of a world where each and every individual being and all of life, including all the kingdoms of nature, can flourish and grow and evolve as we're meant to. That's where we're going. So the question always is, well, how are we going to accomplish this? This sounds wonderful, mm-hmm. but how are we going to get there? Well, first of all, it's important to understand that kind of control is being broken down. It's dissolving, partially because there has been a permission given by other civilizations beyond our planet and by great beings to begin to help us in our struggle to free ourselves more and more as this process unfolds. So there's a careful calibration between making sure our free will is not interfered with. At the same time, increasing amounts of help is given. So every time we take a tiny step to do anything to raise our consciousness, free ourselves from any kind of automatic behaviors or thought, rise out of that mass fear into a higher state, more light and love is given to us to reinforce that and help us move even further. So there's a balance between us taking the action and the light that can be given. This is a very important principle, because free will is the fundamental of our world and of the whole
right.
universe. So this is, everything we do is magnified. And of course, because we have the unified field and one human mind field, everything we do resonates through the entire field. So what's happening is more and more people now are waking up on this planet. There's no question about that. And all the whistleblowers are talking about what's happening. All the people who are, you know, working and meditating and thinking and rising up and reading and discovering the truth of what's going on is affecting the entire field. And so it becomes like a virtuous spiral, and we're all moving up together more and more. Meanwhile, the powers that control everything are finding it more and more difficult to continue that control because of all this awakening going on, all the revelations about the corruption. And now people see very clearly that, you know, there is huge problems with our banking system, with the government, with all these things going on. And that sets the stage for a complete reorganization of the entire system. That is where we're headed, because there is a plan really being carried forward by many world leaders to actually reorganize our system with a new financial system where we will no longer have interest-based money. We will have money set up as a world currency backed by gold and commodities that's completely stable. No more interest on loans. No more interest for money to be circulating, and a recirculation of all the illicit wealth that's been gathered up by the people who exploit and manipulate the financial system, all that will be redistributed to the people who everyone on the planet has enough for what they need. We have the Pope, you know, who, and certainly a surprise to me and many other people, that from that source, we have a presentation of a vision for humanity that's completely in alignment with the, what I call the Light Alliance, which is that great network and flow of energy from even civilizations beyond our planet and the spiritual masters to humanity and to the earth. He's articulating the template for the vision of what we need. We have to take care of the poor and see ourselves as one family, regenerate and care for the environment, you know, stop the violence and find peace and create brotherhood and sisterhood all over the world. This is the vision. And he's also very interestingly announced that on December 8th, there's going to be beginning of a jubilee year, where in the traditional canon of the church, jubilee year means a forgiveness, not only of sins, but of debts.
And
yes, and that's part of the plan, is that there will be debt forgiveness, mortgage forgiveness. All of this is going to happen. It's a very powerful new vision of how we can transform this world so that it will be at a level, it's pretty much inconceivable for most people to imagine the kind of world we're going to be living in, where love is prevalent, and the fundamental issue for humanity that permeates everything right now, on the subconscious level, is survival fear. That fear permeates everywhere, and even people with plenty of money, there's this survival fear, and that's deliberately perpetrated and cultivated by the control forces. And what is being done is that is going to be eliminated completely. And once that's not present, humanity will be a disciple. Take a huge collective sigh of relief.
Could you imagine? My goodness, how different it's going to be.
Exactly. The shift will be enormous, beyond comprehension. And because that's the tension, that's the stress that everyone feels underlying everything because of that way the financial system has been managed, so we keep people in need and struggling to survive, and therefore they can manipulate and control them more easily. That's been the game. And that's coming to an end. And the Federal Reserve System is now in process of being changed over. Interesting point, and I can give you some evidence for that. Federal Reserve, when you wanted to access, you know, its information, you used to go to federalreserve.org on the internet. Now, what I've received, and other people are saying this, the Federal Reserve has been now nationalized, taken over by the government, which is what it never should have been, taken out of the government. And if you go to the internet and look for Federal Reserve, the only way you can find it is federalreserve.gov.
That's quite an obvious switch, isn't it?
It's a very, very big thing, because what that means is that the government can now issue funds, money, into the system with no interest and no debt and no new taxation. Because that, which was the constitutional right of the government, it's in the Constitution, the government is supposed to issue the money. But with the corrupt and illegal Federal Reserve Act of 1913, they set up the Federal Reserve, which is really a cartel of banks. It's not federal, and it doesn't have any reserves.
Wow.
And that's now being taken back by the government, which is exactly what needed to happen, so that the government can issue money without having to pay interest on it to put money into the system, which is what we had until now. This is an extremely important development.
Yes,
so
I would say.
There is a lot of going on in the whole financial system as well. I mean, we have the five BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, started this new bank, and that's now called the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. And that is a bank that's meant to replace the IMF, because the IMF has been controlled by those dark forces, and set up a new banking system where the decision-making about the loans and all the rest will be done by a group, by consensus, and it's an open process rather than controlled by a few people as it was in the IMF. So there's a lot of things going on in the financial system, and that is very significant because the financial system has been the primary mechanism by which this control has been placed over humanity, as
right.
well as manipulation through the media.
Right.
And
yes.
one of the things people ask me, well, what can I do? One of the most important things is, you know, people pay a lot of attention to their food diet. Right, but I
yes.
maintain that it's more important what is your media diet.
so good. Yes.
What are you taking into your consciousness in terms of
yes.
movies, television, and there's so much dark, negative, violent
yes.
stuff going on in the media. It's just awful, and
it really
that
is
part of the control pattern, which is to make humanity afraid, to make us not trust each
mm-hmm.
other, to feel like everybody's dangerous and violent and therefore and corrupted, and therefore we just might as well be that way ourselves, because
right.
that's the way it is. And all that is part of the corruption process. So letting go of that, just being very, very careful about what you take in terms of, you know, that kind of thing, books, movies, television, everything. And really reading and focusing on inspiring, uplifting things that give you a positive, hopeful vision of the future. And this applies to everything. My advice to people is, if you read, there's a lot of people putting stuff out on the internet, you know, channeling this, that, and the other.
Right.
And I always say, just look at how you feel inside
yeah.
yourself after you've read or watched or listened to.
Yes.
anything that you come across, and let your internal guidance, your heart, your soul, tell you, is this good for me or not?
Yes.
Do I feel better? Do I feel uplifted? Do I feel inspired? Or do I feel depressed and fearful and angry or whatever? That's a very powerful way to evaluate what's being put out. And this is important because there's a lot of information being put out on the internet. Some of it is...
Yeah.
disinformation deliberately intended to confuse humanity, and some of it is mixed, you know, somewhat of it's accurate,
right.
and some of it is not, and it's very, very hard to sort through and figure out what's what. So
right.
it's allowing your internal guidance system to respond to it and ask yourself, you know, how is this affecting me?
Wonderful. You have so much information. I really hope everybody comes and floods your seminars in Naples and Bonita. And I want to give your website out again for registration. It's www.worldtransfiguration.com. And the phone number to call everybody if you're in the Bonita and Naples area is 239-777-2983. Gordon Asher Davidson, you are phenomenal. And I'm so glad that you're here offering us some insight into a hopeful future instead of a fear-based one, because I'm so sick of hearing about catastrophes and fear-based realities that I would like to shift that into some more bliss, because I do think we're all worthy of some bliss.
Absolutely.
So I really, really resonate with what you're saying, and I commend you for your message and your calling. God bless you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gordon, for being on the show today. It's been a true delight. You're wonderful to wrap everything up, because I started off with the fear-based mind control, and you just took it and wrapped it right up for me. You did a beautiful job. Thank you. But
good. I'm glad.
Everybody, please, like, tune in to Gordon Davidson and his transformation of our world, transfiguration of our world. Fabulous book, and I look forward to all of you just shifting your reality into a more bliss-filled state because of Gordon's instruction, insight, and initiative. God bless all of you. And Gordon, thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you.
I'm going to say farewell to everyone. It's closing time. God bless, and have a wonderful, blessed week. I'm holding light for all of you. God bless you. Bless on, everyone.